Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Big Gay Date. My name is Dave Mosley.
My name is Carl Skeens.
And tonight we are watching the 1960 Alfred Hitchcock masterpiece of suspense and surprise. This is Psycho.
This movie has probably the most iconic movie scene, in movie history, correct?
I would say so. I'm sure on one of those like shows where they compile the 50 best, 50 biggest scenes or biggest surprises in movie history, it's like Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, and this is right up there, vying for one and two every single fucking time.
It's so good.
I don't know what happens here, because we get two Universal logos on the one that we're watching, followed by a Paramount logo, because it wasn't actually a Universal film when it came out.
Yeah, we should probably just give them a heads up when the black and white movie starts.
Yeah, get to your seats. Because nobody will be admitted to the podcast once the movie starts.
A little concession cartoon characters sing by.
Yeah.
Oh, black and white.
So, and I, for some reason we're in widescreen as well, and I think that's just a cropping thing of trying to get it up to HD.
And even the music is so suspenseful.
See, no fucking time wasted. Alfred Hitchcock, Psycho.
Boom.
Yeah, music's really good score. Everyone remembers the shower scene stabbing music and everything, but the theme that plays throughout it all, really, really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Really good. Memorable.
Mm-hmm.
This part here in particular. It's just like, it's kind of
wild
and crazy, but also, I don't know. It's very cool.
This is the Hitchcock, like, I know, like, the movie, the song at the beginning of the movie is supposed to be, like, the theme, but that is not always, in title-wise, that is not always the case. This is the Psycho theme, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Heavily changed from the novel. Also, I like that Hitchcock's cameo happens kind of early.
Yeah, it's good to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Because by this point, he'd kind of been known for that, right?
Mm-hmm. So in everything.
Yeah. He didn't want to distract people from, I don't know, do you do that ever? I guess, I don't know, who does, we all do it in Marvel movies, I guess, right? We're all always on the lookout for the Stan Lee cameo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know? And when it comes, you're like, hey, and then you can kind of relax, like, it's over, you can concentrate on the movie again, you know?
Uh-huh. Can stop looking for it.
Yeah, I guess it's a little distracting.
Yeah. And then the marketing for this, Alfred Hitchcock was actively, like, asking people, please do not tell other people the ending. Don't spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
And people were listening. There were lines
wrapped
around the
block. It was a simpler time back then.
Oh, yeah.
Before spoiler alerts. Yeah, and you could show people a movie like months in advance and be like, hey, please don't spoil the ending to your friends. And they were like, yeah, okay.
People listen.
Yeah.
Don't want to fuck it up for anybody else. Now no one cares.
No.
People actively want to fuck it up for other people.
Now, this is pretty scandalous back in, like, repressed 1960s America to show a woman in a bra.
And a couple in the same bed?
Yeah.
You ever watched Isle of Lucy?
No.
Ever?
Never.
What? Okay, TV couple for years. Everyone loved that TV couple. That TV couple slept on two separate twin beds that were pushed together, and both comforters met in the middle, pushed down between the two beds. Like, that's how TV couples were. Movie couples, like, it just didn't happen. So the fact that we got same bed and titties.
Yeah. And, like, they're being so open right now about their affair and everything. It's like, this is the main character. How are we supposed to root for this woman? She's everything we stand against.
Uh-huh. wait, but where's Anthony Perkins? You're going to be asking yourself that for about 20 minutes. It said starring. It didn't mean the same thing.
No.
See, and then everybody was surprised at the end of season one of Game of Thrones and they murdered a main character. Hitchcock did that shit.
He was doing that shit way before it was...
Yeah. Don't be complaining like it's new. You fell for it. You just feel bad about that. He's Sean Bean. You never get attached to Sean Bean. No matter if you know the story or not. You know, right?
Even his family aren't that attached to Sean Bean.
Yeah.
They know what's coming.
Probably waiting for him to go off on a business trip and just not come back one time.
Or just go to a farm upstate or something.
That's a real place. I thought that...
the farm upstate.
Yeah. I got a couple dogs that went off to the farm upstate.
It's huge. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
It's the place to be. Everybody goes there.
A lot of different kinds of animals there, too. Fucking hamsters.
Goldfish. So, this is our alternative commentary for movies that we had nothing to do with. And we're going to be dropping as many hints and facts about the movie as we can along the way. But we're also going to be drinking quite heavily. So we just may go off on tangents. We may just start making facts up. Who knows?
That only happens sometimes. Tangents happen all the time.
Tangents happen all the time. And then we just get mistaken for facts and talk about different movies and stuff. So
facts are subjective. Doesn't matter.
In this world, they are. Yeah. you don't need to drink, but just to make it more entertaining for you and for us, we're going to be. I'm drinking my Bud Light, typical. You're on Yuengling again?
I am on Yuengling, sir.
Are you smoking today as well? Because we are recording this on 420.
Yes, okay. I am.
So you're going to be high as a kite as well.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty... Well, never mind.
And as always, we do have a little special something planned for what we consider our favorite moments of the movie. We're going to be drinking a shot of some liquor that we have along. So do you have a favorite moment of this movie?
Yes, when he's educating her on crows or like on birds' eating habits, like she actually gives a shit.
Okay, good. All right, so what is your liquor choice for that?
I figured I would just drink that shitty liquor that I left here.
Five fucking weeks.
Entirely because Norman Bates leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and then this leaves a bad taste in your mouth, so I have a reason.
Okay. All right, justified somewhat. I mean, you're still just using the same fucking bottle that you've had in the freezer for 5-6 weeks going now. And you know that shit doesn't get any better with age. Well, let me tell you what I have. And I guess my favorite moment is not the shower scene, but I think I might drink it during the shower scene anyway, because this is Trader Vic's chocolate liqueur.
Ooh.
And can you see why I've picked a chocolate liqueur? Seriously?
I mean, I'm drawing a blank.
Because the shower scene used chocolate syrup instead of blood, because it looked better on film. That's like the one major fucking fact that everybody loves to bring up about Psycho. How do you fucking not... How do you blank on that shit?
Honestly, my most interesting fact about the bathroom scene was how he got that shot aiming up in the shower head.
Okay.
That's all I got.
The fact that it's a... like a 9-inch. It's like a specially designed fucking shower head, right?
Well, it's not a specially designed shower head. They popped it off and they plugged all the center holes, and then they used a really, really long lens on the camera so they could stick the lens up so all the water is going around the camera.
Okay.
That's the only behind the scenes from that scene that I remembered. I had totally forgotten the chocolate thing.
That's the thing every fucking pretentious film school kid brings up or whatever. It's the first thing you fucking learn about making a Psycho, man.
Luckily, I'm not a pretentious film school
kid. It's such a gory scene, but did you know there wasn't really blood? No. Chocolate syrup was darker on film, so he just sprayed it with chocolate.
I mean, I knew it wasn't. I knew they didn't murder Janet Leigh.
Sure. Yeah.
This is good. Before
I'm
Jamie,
glad
right?
you were discerning enough to work out that much. You forget how much of the movie there is before she actually gets to the motel. This whole setup about why she's actually driving and everything. Could have been any fucking reason, but it's kind of cool that there's the whole, you know, stealing money from the bank, goes on the run to start a new life kind of thing. You mm-hmm. know?
Do you watch Bates Motel?
No, the A&E show. My wife does, and I know it's finishing up very shortly. In fact, the season finale, series finale, might actually be next week, I think.
Like they did the shower scene.
I heard about that with Rihanna in her place, right?
Yeah.
Now, was she also playing the same person? Or
same person, however, because they couldn't do it in the show exactly like the movie, they Norman Bates lets her escape. And then when the dude comes looking for her, Norman Bates murders that dude, scene. So he gets the shower scene.
That's what I saw, and I was a little confused.
And the only thing
on.
It changed was after Norman, in this one, when Norman kills her as his mom, then he comes back and he goes, "Mother, what have you done?" Mm-hmm. In Bates Motel, when he kills the dude after letting her go, he goes, "Mother, what have I done?"
Right.
And so, like, you still got the iconic line.
Yeah, but did you hear about the reason they changed it from him? Because he's in, like, his normal clothing in the TV show, but in the movie, obviously, he's dressed up like Mrs. Bates. Did you read their excuse for it? Mm-mm. It doesn't really fly for me, honestly. Something about showrunners said that they didn't want to do it that way and have Norman essentially in drag because of all of the hullabaloo about transgender rights these days. And they didn't want to kind of like, step on anyone's toes or belittle the movement or any of that kind of shit. And I'm like,
I can understand.
I get, but that's
in the planning stages, if that like crosses your mind. But this is Psycho.
You've got to have that iconic kind of like, that's a major part of his fucking character that he.
Yeah, we'll forgive. Nobody's going to hold that against you guys. It is a major.
It was established back in 1960 that that's just what happens in the story.
And
you know?
That is a major symptom of his mental illness.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of a bit of a cop out, honestly, for them not to do it that way. And kind of use that as the excuse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, I wish they had a better excuse than that, because it doesn't really make sense in my head.
But aside from him not being dressed as his mother, I mean, how do you feel about the rest of that? Is that all right?
About, what, the change?
The fact that he let her go and killed the dude.
I mean, I get that you kind of, you know, you've got to try and do something fresh. Because this last whole season basically just retells the movie from his point of view.
Right,
so
before he murders that dude, the hallucination of his mom shows up. And it's basically coming clean to him and explaining why you invented me. And it all stems from your father and blah, 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 blah. So when he goes down and murders the dude, that dude is mentally standing in for everything that Norman Bates hates about his father or lack of father. Like, there. It. Oh, man. Is interesting.
I'm sure if I watched the show, like, I haven't asked my wife what she thought about it. I think she thought she's always.
But him in drag would totally be better. Yeah, absolutely.
I know my wife's always surprised or always happy when there's like an established, like in like a remake or something, when they do kind of change things and go in a different direction. She's always happy with that because it's fresh, you know, especially for a remake. If you've seen the original, you know exactly where it's going. Very true for this with the 1998 remake or whatever it is with Vince Vaughn. It's like a shot-for-shot remake of
this.
It was
good.
Yeah, but a lot of people didn't a lot of people would have been fine with a remake, but they didn't need a fucking shot-for-shot remake, you know?
It have you seen Funny Games?
No.
Oh, my God. It's to say this he's not like Austrian, but one of those countries in that part of the world, this guy put out this horror movie that's really crazy. These two like white kids, super rich in this rich neighborhood, end up murdering a family, and then the next morning after they kill the family, they go to another house on the lake and rinse and repeat and do it again. And it's this crazy horror movie. Well, they remade it with Tim Roth and Naomi Watts. here in America, and it's called Funny Games, and it is a shot for shot of the movie to the point where they even rebuilt the house from the original. They rebuilt it, the American set, from the same blueprints.
Okay.
It's the same movie, but in English, and it's...
Yeah, parts of this movie look a little worse for wear after age and time. But this was a low budget movie even for him. That's a weird shot. And he didn't take his normal film crew, he took out his TV crew to make it. So a lot of corners were cut and everything. Because, yeah, it does look like an old episode of The Twilight Zone and not a full movie, in a way, you know.
But he also took a cut in exchange for 60%.
Smart fucking move, yeah. Where,
he just blew it out of the park with the promo for this.
Yeah. He did. I mean, the trailer's like fucking 6 minutes long or something. Mm-hmm. And it's just him walking around the set, right? And introducing the house and everything. And
like the printed stuff and like and all the posters that they had like plastered up in the different towns.
Mm-hmm.
It turned this movie into an event.
Right, yeah. Before that ever really kind of existed.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of in the lobbies having those, like, you know, nobody was allowed in once the movie started, and, you know, begging people not to spoil the ending and everything like that. Buying up all the fucking copies of the book that it was based on. And like a really small book that I don't think he even read. I think he read a review of it. And he kind of did it all, but kind of based on that. He paid $9,000 for the rights with the author of the novel. And then just bought up every single copy of the book in California.
Wow. That's, I mean, I guess take it seriously.
Yeah.
Will too.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything kind of similar to that. That would be like, you know, it'd be like David Fincher buying up every single copy of Fight Club before the movie got released.
Yeah, but I feel like David Fincher would be way more happy buying every single copy of the Fight Club movie and then not even buying his book, because he's been very vocal about the fact that he thinks the movie was totally better. Sometimes the movie ending is...
Well... There's pride in your work, and then there's arrogance, so...
I mean, I guess, yeah. Did you read Fight Club 2? The graphic novel?
No.
Oh, man. It's good. It's real good. Too bad Brad Pitt and Edward Norton are too old to...
Right.
...rock that.
So, have you ever seen this film unspoiled? Like, what's your earliest recollection of watching this movie, and did you know the twist before you watched it? It's one of those things that's so ingrained in pop culture.
Yeah, there had to have been a point in my life when I was younger where I did not know, but I honestly don't remember that point.
No.
I've always just kind of...
I mean, all the parodies in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know that scene, and you also kind of... I don't think I knew this... I don't think I watched this movie before I knew that Norman Bates was also playing his mother, who was already dead and everything like that. I mean, how fucking cool would it have been to watch this movie knowing absolutely nothing? Because it's a really cool little story. And it kind of just plays out at a great pace. You know, you're watching this main character for the first 40 minutes of the movie, and then they die, and then it just picks up with their friends that go looking for them. Like... You don't get that anymore, you know?
Yeah, people would be really, really angry that they got emotionally invested in, much like they did at the end of season one of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
What's up, cop? What are you doing? Get out of here, state pooper. see that if you take black electrical tape and cover the... Just carry black electrical tape in your car. And when you see a state trooper, a highway patrol car just parked that nobody's in it, you get your black electrical tape and you cover up the T and the little bottom like leg of the R, and it changes their car to state pooper, and there's a really good chance that they're going to get in their car and continue working and doing cop shit and not even notice that they're state pooper. You can take that to the bank.
Do it long enough, you can take that straight to jail. Find the one state trooper that fucking inspects his car, walks all the way around it before he gets in.
Well, that's why you don't do it when they're there. You don't want to get, like, arrested for, like, harassing a police officer. You want the cop to, if he notices, you want him to walk out, see it, and go, ah, stupid kids.
So you want to find a cop in the 1960s, then, basically. I don't know. I have a habit of doing stupid shit right as somebody of authority walks up or around the corner or something, you know, right into the field of view.
That's kind of a personal problem.
I know. It's just bad. It's just shitty timing on my part.
Remind me to not do...
Don't do anything illegal around me, because cops just swarm on me like flies to shit, yeah.
Definitely.
Or just don't do anything illegal, you know. I guess that's the takeaway of this story. But, did you mute? I mean, have you ever seen... when you first watched Empire Strikes Back, did you know that Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father?
Probably.
Yeah, it's just... It's a shame, like, one of those... You know, just one of those things. I'm trying to think, like, what's a... I guess the best, our equivalent, I guess, would be The Sixth Sense, right? That's a movie that we were old enough to kind of enjoy as it came out and discover that surprise kind of together.
Like watching that with my parents.
Yeah.
And I remember being fucking mind blown.
Yeah. It was incredible. Like, I went and saw that with my dad 1 week, and then the next week we went to go and see Sleepy Hollow. And as we were walking out, we saw the poster for Sixth Sense, and we were just like, do you want to go and see that again? Like, now? We're like, sure. And then we watched it, like, right again, and so much fun to go back and know, like, it's a completely different movie when you watch it a second time, when you know what's coming. But that's, yeah, the closest thing I think we had to surprises like classic movies like this. Which I feel bad for kids that watch the Star Wars prequels, you know, in chronological order, you know.
Usual Suspects as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and it blew my tiny little mind, man.
Yeah.
It turned me into a lifelong fan of Kevin Spacey. Like,
yeah.
I'm like 19 years old getting drunk in the Navy, and Kevin Spacey movie comes out, and like, I gotta go.
sounds like you're the right guy for Kevin Spacey, honestly. 19 years old getting drunk in the Navy. have we had a movie come out in like the last 3 or 4 years that kind of blew everybody's mind like that? Everyone was like, whoa, what?
I'm
trying to think of like...
I can think of one that just at the end... to some degree, maybe that final scene in Split.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really include The Village on that.
You know, when people are like, when websites are talking about movies and they're like, we have to talk about that ending and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of one of those we've had recently that...
I don't think we have one. I mean, we had Cabin in the Woods, which turned into a different movie.
That was cool, yeah.
But that wasn't a wait until the very end and then blow your mind.
No. I guess we get that more in TV these days, don't we? Like,
yeah,
massive
click.
Yeah. I tell you, I did like recently, I watched Arrival. Have you seen that?
No.
It's really good. And it's really tough to talk about it without giving away the ending. Mm-hmm. So I guess I won't. But when you get to that, like, that moment, it's not like a, not like a twist per se, but it's just like a sudden moment of clarity, and you realize, oh shit, like, this is a really different way of thinking about, as vague as I can put it, time and language, and it just, it's one of those things where it all comes together, you know? Mm-hmm. You know. Saw, that's another one. I liked that. That was a good twist ending.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool.
When it all kind of comes together at the end, and you're like, oh shit, yeah. So how long has she been on the road now? 2 days? This is day two, right? And she's going to pull over again. So she's going to Fairview or something, some fake province in California, but at most it's like 5 hours away geographically.
Yeah.
Especially in 1960s America, you know, paved highways and shit.
Yeah, but 2 days is absurd.
Yeah.
2 days is fucking absurd.
She's fucking around in circles. And
have you seen the meme how Moses wandered the desert for
years
and he can do it in 6 days?
Yeah.
This is just
this is the equivalent. Yeah. Yeah. Should make that alternative meme there.
Yeah, like, I'd like to figure out where she was coming from versus the fictional place in California.
Yeah.
And what that fictional distance is.
Marion Crane drove for 3 days to get from Phoenix to California, and then just the Google Maps, like, yeah, 5 hours. You know.
Women drivers.
Yeah. I like that.
See, even she's smirking. She thought it was funny. I don't mean that because I didn't make the kitchen reference because she was a woman. I was calling her woman, and also.
Well, you've done it now.
Yeah, if your windshield wiper sucked this bad, this is the kind of scenario where you just pull over.
Yeah, just wait it out. Clearly, you have no problem sleeping in your car on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's more determined than I would be. I'd have pulled over by this point.
What?
This is all on the Universal Hollywood backlot, isn't
it?
Yeah,
well, I mean, we used to have the Bates Motel House here, too.
Do you remember that being here? When's the first time you came down to...
93.
Shit, so, like, right around the time it opened and got, like, bigger, I guess. Not the house, obviously, because this is California, yeah, but the one that was the one they built was for Psycho 4, the TV movie, right? And I remember I did a little bit of reading on that, that it was painted like bright yellow and shit for like flashback scenes for the young Norman Bates, and then they painted it that kind of dark, shitty color.
It looked like a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you were driving by versus when you were actually in the park looking at it.
Right.
That's also when we had the guitar-shaped hard rock.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
And I've tried to do, like, some Google Foo and take the maps and shit and work out where everything was in the old days. I can't fucking work it out.
Oh, I could show you exactly where. The building was still there up until very recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just seems like a fucking mess, like... I'm looking at old pictures from when Universal first opened, and then you look at it now, and it's like to the left of the main entrance where the parking lot was, there's a massive fucking lagoon, you know, where the boats ferry people from all the hotels and shit. The Universal on there has undergone a massive expansion. So.
Carbon aviators.
You know, I think would be an interesting modern day Norman Bates. what's his fucking name? Something Parsons from Big Bang Theory plays Sheldon Cooper.
Not Alan, because that's a musician.
Yeah, not Neil. Fuck, he's just got one of his generic first names. Fuck, what is it?
I don't know.
I'll look it up. But yeah, can you imagine like a Sheldon Cooper-style Norman Bates? Just being really fucking socially awkward around women and shit, because he gets that down absolutely fine. But then he pulls out the fucking psycho murderer side and shit and dragging up as his dead mom. That'd be an interesting interesting take. And it'd be good to see him do something like that, a little different. I mean, similar, but then very, like, wildly different, you know.
And he's so nice.
Yeah. He's too nice.
In there, definitely. Yeah. See a few. Have a good shower.
Jim Parsons. Fucking annoy the hell out of me if I didn't look it up.
Yeah, that's a pretty nondescript average white guy name.
Yeah.
What is Jim short for?
Jimothy. James?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James
yeah.
T. Kirk, he's dead. Jim, yeah. It's, or Jimadiah.
Jimadiah. Oh my god. I don't know how they get Dick from Richard. That's always been weird.
Yeah.
And even, like, Bob from Robert has always, like, kind of bugged me.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Rob, not Bob.
What yeah. You, where are you getting this from?
Rhyming slang people's names?
I think what's interesting about this is, like, he kills her, but it's got nothing to do with the money. Right?
Yeah.
Normally it would be. Normally it'd be some kind of like Fargo kind of thing, yeah.
It's entirely because mother thinks she's a saucy bitch.
We're kind of pumping your scene. I guess I'll go and get the horrible, bad tasting vodka out of the freezer. So we're going to talk some birds right now, right?
It's your scene.
No, we talk birds first, yeah? Which is your, yeah. The crows and, the taxidermy and everything.
You thought that was with her sister.
Oh, is it? No. Oh, well, I got no fucking clue.
How
now.
Would she be up in his house?
They're not. They're in the, no one goes up to the house. They're in the, like, the waiting room or whatever for the motel part. Yeah.
Supper. Do you call it supper?
No.
Do you call it dinner?
Yeah, I guess so.
What do you call breakfast? Do you call it breakfast? Do you have brunch? Are you super British? I know we've had this before.
We did this with second breakfast with the Hobbit, yeah.
Yeah. We decided second breakfast is the way to go, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then 11's is.
Second breakfast and 11's.
Yeah. I don't eat breakfast, man. I'm not awake at the right time to do a breakfast, let alone second breakfast or 11's.
Well, I mean, I feel like breakfast and 11's could be not necessarily at like a certain time in the morning or 11, but more based on that interim of time between them.
It's just an idea. It's a state of mind.
Will be an hour after you wake up, whenever that may be.
That's fair. That's a good way to look at it.
However, 11's is at 11, just...
It just makes sense.
Yeah, definitely better.
Now, was that whole argument for her benefit, do you think? Or do you think he just talks like that? I guess he talks like that anyway, because he kills her, and then he runs up and starts screaming like, "Mother, what have you done?" So
because he's bad shit crazy.
Yeah.
That was totally not for her benefit.
It's just all for him and her in his head.
Yeah, I just imagine the tiny little Freddie Highmore has been doing this for 15 years and turned into him, and he's just yelling at himself. I remember I was inconvenienced at a place for a little bit where I couldn't, like, go or communicate with other people, and you talk to yourself, but the moment you start replying back, if you catch it, you're good.
Before the words exit your mouth and you hear it.
No. Once you hear it, once you insult yourself, and then you insult yourself back as part B of the conversation, and then part C interjects, and it's like, wait a second, you're talking to yourself. And if you can catch it, you're golden. But Norman Bates never caught it.
No. He needs like a third person, like a mediator. It's real. Yeah, exactly. I won't have you bringing whorish girls to dinner. Oh, mother, well, you don't understand. Hey, who are you talking to? Like, just fucking go around in a big fucking circle. I haven't seen Split. Is there anything like that in Split?
The talking back and forth?
Yeah.
I mean, kind of. He has, like, 20-something personalities, and you really, like, meet a handful. Mm-hmm.
And I know he kind of flits very quickly between them. Oh, yeah, here's your shot. Okay.
It's a falsity. It's really a falsity because I went to the University of Redundant University. Giggle, giggle. I'm going to kill you later. And she has no idea. She has no clue. Spread that peanut butter. I can't even tell what it is. It's black and white. That shit could be anything. It could be cream cheese for. It could be straight up butter. Like, I don't know what people were eating.
Yeah. Or what looks better on film than butter.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was watching this thing about the seed vault recently.
Yeah.
Did you know that 93% of, like, vegetable and like fruits and like agriculture and shit in our country has extinct in the last 100 years. We only have like there used to be this huge diversity.
Yeah.
And like every banana is based on that one banana, you know, and we've kind of done that across the board and just lost a bunch of shit.
But they have those, even the stuff that's extinct, we still have seeds for it, right?
Some of them, not, there's a lot of them we don't. Some of them, there's, like, interesting stories where, like, they managed to find them. But the seed vault in Norway, GoPro did this thing with them. It's really interesting. Kind of sad. But to watch, like, the old...
Does interesting mean something different in Norwegian?
No. But, like, to watch the old man at the end taking off his glasses saying, like, all I want is just the proper endowment to finance it. Because with 1% of... what they're spending on other things, he's like, this could be funded for the whole world forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of disgusting how much money we're spending on certain things, whereas these minuscule amounts of money it would take to fund, you've seen all the factoids and shit about, like, Meals on Wheels and everything.
He's like, if we can just work together to solve one actual world problem,
mm-hmm.
just one.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, little man, you're gonna die sad.
Yeah, it's not going to happen by the time, it's not going to happen while you're here, sir.
Yeah, but it's such a good idea.
Let's knock this shot back while we're still looking at these birds. Cheers, thanks man. Oh god. It's the gift that keeps on shitting in your shoes before it leaves your house.
Whenever I drink that nasty ass shot, one eye opens up really, really wide, and the other one opens up really wide. I look like Glenn after, like, Negan beat him with a bat. Before he blew his entirely. That's how my eye looks every time I drink that shot.
My eye opens up really wide as well. It's not the one on my face. Why do I keep letting this you do this to me, man?
Well, I mean, it makes this time we're drinking something that will more than likely be really enjoyable.
We'll see. Yeah.
Following anything after that vodka, as long as it starts with that vodka, everything will taste better afterwards.
Like, do we work? I'm getting flashbacks now. It's all uphill from here, or it's all downhill from here? I don't know. These same fucking conversations week after week with you.
I only have new things to talk about when I've been, like, doing new shit.
We just had big Star Wars convention here in town, obviously.
Oh, yeah. How was that? How was the party?
I don't remember, man. I don't remember.
Do you remember Weird Al? Or was everything blurry?
No, I remember being present for all the Weird Al stuff, and I really waited until he had finished playing before I started wandering off and trying to do other shit. It was cool, yeah. I mean, I was a little bummed because started off with the song from one of his new albums, which I'm not too familiar with, and then he went straight into Albuquerque, which is a 15-minute fucking gauntlet. So I kind of wish, you know, he played a couple more normal hits before that.
Yoda.
He ended with Saga Begins and Yoda, which, you know, is all you can ask for, honestly. He was on for a while. It was like a 40-minute show, I think.
No,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then after that, everybody loves Weird Al. Nerds mm-hmm. really love Weird Al.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge crossover here.
Absolutely. It was a cool show. I've seen him before a couple of summers ago when he played at Hard Rock. It was the first time I've ever seen him live. I've loved him since a kid when my friend played one of his CDs and just really, like, never heard anything like that before. The parodies and everything, like, to that level, to that caliber. And plus, you don't really hear that sort of stuff in the UK. Like, Weird Al was not a thing in the UK growing up in the 90s, you know. It had to be these CDs you imported. So it was really cool to see him. It was cool to see him at this show again in a slightly more intimate setting. Like, I got a lot closer to the stage than I did at Hard Rock. But I don't know what the fuck happened, man. I went in there with like $100 and our friend Andrea was bartending, and we made a beeline for her to get a drink, drop like $50 on her, just be like, hey, just look after me as I keep coming up, because there were lines forming and I did not want to stand in lines for your alcohol. Fucking, that's my biggest pet peeve. So we dropped that, and the drinks, they were just liquor and ice. Like, there's no mixers in there whatsoever. I was gone after like one or two. I don't know what time I left. I want to say I was there until like 1:30 or so. I think I would have stuck around to get my money's worth, because it was an expensive fucking ticket to get in. But after like 12:30 or so, I do not remember anything happening. I called Tara like 10 times in 8 minutes trying to find where she was. Because I accidentally called my sister in England, which was like 5:30 in the morning that time, followed by a text message conversation like on Facebook Messenger trying to explain myself, which did not go well, apparently. I posted all kinds of fucking random statuses. Basically, my Sunday and Monday was just spent cleaning up my digital footprint that I'd left from the night before. I had text messages that I'd started writing that actually ended up as Facebook statuses, so all these half-finished thoughts and things. I had comments on videos that I do not remember watching or looking for. All kinds of... surprisingly, I don't have any shitty photos from that night. I took one clear shot of Weird Al, nailed it, and that was the only photo I took all night. So that was good. I didn't need to clear up too much space on the camera. But, I wish I remembered more from the night. I didn't even fucking realize until, like, 1 o'clock that they had fucking aerial dancers in the scaffolds of this convention center and shit. Tara didn't even fucking look up and see them at any point. So... yeah, it was a cool night. They did a lot of, it was a nice atmosphere in there.
Cool.
And it was spacious as well. I've been to some of these AfterCon parties where it's really fucking cramped and everything. Well, they sold like 5,000 tickets, but there was space in there, so it was cool. Yeah, it was a good setup. So I'm happy we went. I wish I hadn't lost. Like, I reached into my pocket and I found like $12 the next morning. I'm like, I've literally just pulled money out of my pocket haphazardly, and some of it's fallen out and been left behind. So all in all, it was about a $500 night with the hotel and the tickets and everything, which is a fucking lot. But I had fun for two people, you know. So we had fun. And we have Spooky Empire coming up tomorrow as well. So I'm going to be packing up for that and doing a 3-day weekend over there as well.
Yeah, I think that was
this weekend. You should come over and do some fucking like magic tricks by the pool and shit.
Got more stuff coming in on Tuesday. I'm set. I'm not going to need any new material.
Yeah.
Or, like, accoutrement to do material for months.
I just fine-tune what you got. I
continue to order new material, but that doesn't mean that I need it.
Right.
At this point, it is a luxury and not an actual need. Now yeah. I have more than enough to book myself doing new shit for the next, like, 6 months.
Nice. And we had our friend John Edward come over for Star Wars Celebration Stores. He's been crashing here the last like week and a half. He's gone, but he we took him out to Hollywood Studios and Disney Parks and shit like that. He went over to the little private event they did at the Hollywood Studios for the Star Wars group, Star Wars Galactic Nights, like a little private ticket event. He had fun. It kind of sounded like what me and you did a few months ago at the Magic Kingdom, where basically it was like a 10-minute wait for everything over there. Plus, essentially, yeah, but a Disney buyout where they then charge the guests $150 for a ticket, you know? Similar kind of thing. But I've been saying for a while they should really offer that thing at the Hollywood Studios, because those are the rides I'd want to ride multiple times, like Rock and Roller Coaster and Aerosmith and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they kind of did that with just with Star Wars nerds, though. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, and there we go. First toilet in American cinema.
We're in a brave new era, folks.
Yeah, we weren't popping off, showing off, like, flushing toilets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was paper. It wasn't even, like, poop or nothing. Like, it's not a big deal.
Flash forward, like, 50 years to Hall Pass, where there's a girl sitting on a bathtub, and she sneezes and shits at the same time, and it splatters on the wall. Like, we've come a long way, baby.
Oh, see? That shot.
Uh huh.
That shot.
That shot right there with the.
And then the water that's going directly in front of the camera is clearly not even attached to the shower head water.
Yeah.
Look at that, a second water source.
I see it. Yeah. More water. It's fucking moving as well. It's a guy with a fucking hose, isn't it? All right, here we go. Let's count them. 70 cuts in 45 seconds.
3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Let's not actually count them, because that's really dull audio material. But what's cool is we never see the we never see any actual gratuitous gore. It's all implied through the editing and the camera. The camera is the knife, and that's a crucial part of it. There. I guess we'll do this now. It just makes sense. But for the record, my next favorite moment was going to be where the inspector walks into the house and gets stabbed at the top of the staircase, and he does that really fucking weird, like, backwards fall. It's a really creatively done shot, but it does not look, doesn't hold up, you know? It's like old-timey movies.
Yeah.
So there we have it, our...
Did they make that scene look as weird as well? Or did they...
I don't know. I have not seen the remake of it, honestly. I'm interested, though. I would be surprised if they went gratuitous with it. I imagine I heard it's a shot-for-shot remake, so I imagine that they kept it as kind of awkward as that as well.
I haven't seen it in years. I just remember Anne Heche and then him at the end in the cell. I remember nothing else.
Who plays Norman Bates? Is it Vince Vaughn? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Weird cast.
Yeah.
Very weird cast.
Very of-the-moment 90s casting, like shoot from the hip. Mm-hmm. That's some DreamWorks fucking style casting right there. Who's popular right now? That'll do. Yeah. Found a new little liquor store today that has a little bit more variety than the ones I've been going to, so I've got some really interesting shots coming up for these next few movies, I think.
Cheers.
Sir. Cheers. Oh.
I would put that in my coffee.
I would put that in my penis.
That too.
Just to treat the next girl to give me a blowjob.
If you warmed your coffee, you could totally stick your dick in it.
Absolutely. That's pretty good.
Like that would be amazing in like hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Slight caramel flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
But then not make it look white like I'm a bitch.
Yeah.
So nobody would know that you like this coffee and you're an alcoholic.
Well, that's another thing. When we went to the hotel, I had some Bacardi cherry in my little thermos thing, which I take to work with water. I did not wash it out after the weekend. So That was a nice sharp. A little bit of residue gets trapped in the lid and everything. So every sip I was taking just had a slight hint of cherry Bacardi. Oh. And just really watered down cherry Bacardi, you know. It was a rough day.
Just enough there to make you question your life choices.
Yeah, it's like, what have I done? Where'd my money go?
Shit came in the mail, and I was like, that's where the money went.
Okay. Right. Yeah, the worst point is when you've spent a bunch of money on something and it hasn't arrived yet, because you're sitting there with no money and no product. Yeah, I got nothing to show for any of this. Never mind that mail takes time, and it's going to fucking get here.
That's how I felt for days. I've been dragging the shit. And every day that I was tracking it and it was getting closer and closer and closer, I realized that tracking things is actually, if you're like me, it may do more harm than good.
Yeah.
And so today I saw that it was on the route, you know, so like...
Out for delivery.
11 o'clock, I run up to the mailbox, nothing there. I go to the front of the neighborhood mailbox, nothing there. 1 o'clock, go there, nothing. 2:30, go up there, lady at the front mailbox. 3 o'clock, shows up to mine. I'm sitting on a bench right beside the mailboxes, and she unloads packages first, and I see my name on a package, but I don't have an ID with me, so I can't do nothing. So I see, like, my package is, like, the third one that she unloads. Didn't even deliver the mail yet, just unloaded the package. And as soon as she put the key in my mailbox, I was standing up with her hand was in it from the back, and my hand was going in it from the front, grabbing the key directly from her hand. And then I grabbed my box and said, fuck it, and I'll get the rest of the mail tomorrow. She was looking at me like, who the fuck is this? And then I'm going to do the same thing again on Tuesday.
Right. I'm always fucking weird at the mail people, because we can see them walking up past the kitchen up to the door. So I'll be sitting here when I know something's coming. I'll see somebody walk up to the door. I'll get up and I hear them kind of knock on the door to let you know something's arrived, but I won't open it until they've driven away, you know? It's just a little fucking weird. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, I was here the whole time, you know?
Yeah, well, you don't want to, like, open the door and let them know that you've literally been sitting on the couch looking.
Yeah, I want the illusion that I've got better things to do than just wait for this shit. I don't want them to know.
But sometimes when you order shit, you got to be waiting out, like, by your mailbox, like you're a kid.
Yeah.
Waiting for your Nickelodeon magazine sweepstakes thing.
It's like the second they start to realize how much this shit means to me is the second shit starts disappearing, you know? I gotta just play the fool like, oh, is it here? All right, I'll get to it eventually. I don't care. Whatever. Are they gone?
Bro, I'm excited for a box full of nothing but playing cards. I don't get out much. I literally showed you toys that consisted of paper products, a Sharpie, and a prosthetic appendage, and they're the coolest things
I've ever. You're like, I've got material for 6 months. I'm super fucking happy.
For real, though, man. God.
Is this where he drives her car into the lake? Which I think is the last shot we get, right? Her them pulling the car back up. By the way... We got to start doing our wrap-up really fucking early because you know this is an old movie, so we're not going to get many credits. You know, like, 12 people worked on this movie, so... yeah. And then we're out. What was I going to say here? Something about the... this dead body. Oh, yeah, the chick in the actual scene. You know, perpetuated the myth that Janet Leigh was... the one during the whole kind of stabbing sequence and talked about, you know, how awkward or terrifying it was to shoot the scene and all that sort of stuff and uncomfortable. And
yeah, I remember hearing about all that.
It's not her for the most part. Basically, unless you see her face, it's not her. It's this chick named Marley Renfro, who was a professional stripper and one of the first Playboy bunnies. So she's the one that's kind of in the... She's the one that's doing the, I guess you could call it nude work, you know?
Yeah, she doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't make notes of this whole fucking story, but there is a really interesting story out there about her where apparently there was a guy that was obsessed with Psycho and he fucking murdered her. Like in late early 90s or something like that. Except that he didn't. He murdered her other stand-in. So Janet Leigh's stand-in during the other scenes, this other chick whose name I don't recall, but I guess the guy thought he was killing her shower scene kind of double. And this chick who did the doubling for the shower scene, after this movie, where she got paid like $500 for the day, she didn't fucking care about the movie or anything. She just kind of lived her life and went swimming with dolphins in Florida and all kinds of shit. She didn't even realize until this reporter came along that she was apparently dead. You know?
That shit is crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not actually Janet Leigh actually in the shower scene, except for the shots where you see her face. It's some other random chick who did not mind getting naked for $500.
Shitty housekeeper.
Yeah. Do you know what Hitchcock called him on set?
What?
Master Bates. Yeah.
Oh, God. Because Hitchcock could say it in a way that he would say it, and then 15 seconds later, you would go,
oh. you. You said she's just gonna throw away what, $40,000? And that's cool. Like, he's again not about the money at all. It's kind of like when the dino DNA gets buried by the mud in Jurassic Park, you know? It's like we as the audience know how important that is, but the people on screen don't know, don't care.
Yeah, but had we known that BD Wong could just show up 3 movies later and fix that shit, then...
Wouldn't have cared so much.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if BD Wong was doing his shady shit on the side already.
At the very beginning?
Yeah, and Nedry was also... Nedry was competition, and Nedry just fucking died. BD Wong don't give a shit. He was already doing it anyway.
B.D. Wong made it onto the ship to get off of there.
Have you seen Mr. Robot?
No.
B.D. Wong is in it. There's like a character that you rarely see, you know, like one of the big bads in charge of...
I think I heard this.
And B.D. Wong, in his day job, he's wearing a suit and he's a super awesome Asian dude.
Mm-hmm.
At night, when he's this crazy, like, dark hacker, he's this Asian broad. He's a transgender woman at night when he doesn't have to, like, be professional and shit. And
right.
It's super crazy because he's so goddamn good, bro. I had no idea that guy was that good of an actor. He's so good.
Yeah, it's weird. And he came back into the movie. Everyone's like, B.D. Wong! And I'm like, I don't remember this guy except for 1993 in the first Jurassic Park. Like, what's so good about him?
Everyone that watches Mr. Robot had now become like accustomed to him being on your radar. The only other thing I knew, I knew him less from Jurassic Park and more from Law and Order SVU, which if I've said it once, I'll say it again, it's the greatest show in syndication history. And he's in that and he's amazing.
Okay.
Isn't he supposed to be in the next one?
I'd be shocked if he's not.
He's like one of the only things tying us to the old one.
Yeah. That and the T-Rex.
Yeah.
Okay, so after an hour, our main character's dead, and now we're going to pick up with that guy that she was fucking at the beginning of the movie. We're going to have a fucking Scooby-Doo mystery on our hands.
Yeah, and the 1960 audience is probably shaking their head going, wait, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched any of the old Hitchcock episodes?
Yeah, I use it to fall asleep, honestly.
I'm that way. I started the Twilight Zone franchise again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That is my go-to need-to-fall-to-sleep show. Because I don't know what it is. It's just something about the style of acting and the fact that there's very little music and ambience. There's very little background noise in these things. It's all Foley effects, which are very deliberate to certain things happening on camera and stuff, and the lack of music, but just the way the lines are delivered. Like, did you see the King Kong remake? Mm-hmm. The actors in that, when they're kind of filming their scenes, captures it absolutely perfectly. It's just so over the top that it would not fly these days, you know. But there's something about listening to that. I can, if I'm starting to kind of doze off, put that in the background for 5 minutes, lights are out, and I'm gone.
It used to be Bob Ross for me, but then it got to be where it was too colorful.
Okay, so you needed a black and white show. Right.
There's so many episodes.
Yeah, man, and there's so many...
Netflix goes to sleep after a couple, so I'm not going to skip that many.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. Like, I can fall asleep, and I'm not, like, pissing away data for, like, 8 hours at night, you know? Mm-hmm. It runs 4 episodes and then it's done, which, I mean, like I say, 10 minutes, I'm gone. But I did find Twilight Zone a lot more interesting than the TV show after Hitchcock Presents. The stories are not as good over there, honestly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The acting is just as bad, but the storylines are not as good.
Yeah. Did you ever, when they used to have the Hitchcock show here at University?
Yes. Yes, they did.
That was cool.
Did you ever see it?
I
don't know when they got rid of it, but I have some notes about that. Yeah, because I did want to talk about that. That's one of my favorite memories of my very, very early trips over here, honestly. So they had a show at Universal Orlando called Universal Studios Florida back then. Alfred Hitchcock, The Art of Making Movies. If you haven't been to the parks since, like, I don't know, what, 2001 or so, 2004? 2003, I think, because there's a... It's where the Shrek building is now. I know in the Shrek movie that's there, that came out before Shrek 2. So, in the early 2000s, they tore that down and replaced it with that, which needs to go, honestly, by this point. But that was a really cool attraction, and that kind of highlighted what the park used to be about, which was actually taking you behind the scenes of making movies. Now it's more like thrill rides and where you... It's
now it's put you in the movie and about the movie industry.
Like, we used to have before Disaster, before we have Fast and Furious coming out, we had Earthquake, which the first 20 minutes of was devoted to teaching you about models and matte paintings and compositing. Yeah. Way cooler than some of the other stuff that kind of they've replaced some of these things with. But yeah, that attraction was really cool. I remember riding it, probably one of my first trips over there, honestly, which I think the first time I visited the park was probably 95 or 96, maybe. The Alfred Hitchcock attraction was really cool. It was kind of in three parts. You started off with a 3D movie. So you sat down in like a theater, you're given 3D glasses, and then you get to watch this montage, I guess, mm-hmm. different Alfred Hitchcock clips. And at a certain point, you're told to put your 3D glasses on, and you can watch a scene from the Dial M for Murder movie, but it's in its original 3D how it was intended, which was cool. I mean, I don't know if it was actually made for 3D at that time, because I know there was a point in those like 50s and 60s movies when 3D was all the fucking rage back then. So you got to see that, but after like 2 minutes or so, the footage starts to break, and then this flock of birds just like crash through the screen and start flying around and smashing shit, and you know, the sets fall into pieces and everything like that. So that's a cool little touch. The next room you move into is the fucking psycho room, which is, you have the replica of the building kind of off in the distance. And you've got close up, you've got a different set which shows the shower scene. So the bathtub, the shower, and the door and everything. And you've got Anthony Perkins on the TV kind of walking you through how they did everything, talking you about all the different facts, how they used a lot of edits, how they fucking used chocolate syrup instead of blood. And
so that's why you mentioned it. This is like a big childhood memory for you.
Yeah, like I said, it's one of the first fucking things you learn about the movie. And you hear it from Anthony fucking Perkins himself. You have somebody on the stage who's kind of like recreate the scene. They use an audience volunteer to play like Norma Bates and everything. And it's cool. Yeah, they have like four different cameras set up for all these different shots, and they show you how by quickly cutting from shot to shot, it creates the illusion of more happening than there really is, which is a trick that fucking every movie uses, honestly. Every action movie, every fight scene, unless you're like The Matrix or something like that, where they actually spend time to choreograph a scene. Every fucking look at Taken, you know? You watch Liam Neeson jump over a fence, it takes 20 edits for him to cut over there. But it's cool. Yeah, again, as somebody who was really interested in filmmaking growing up, that was a really cool thing to see. It kind of it got it in your head very early, these really classic movie-making tricks, which do not really change over time, which is cool. And then the third part was nice because it was like a big open exhibit, kind of like what they have now with the Jimmy Fallon ride over there, except not the beginning of the ride, but the end, so you could mill around there as long as you wanted. But they had like a big replica of the, is it the Statue of Liberty at the end of, not Vertigo, is it Vertigo? Fuck, I don't know. There's a film of his where there's a guy hanging off the Statue of Liberty and he falls and everything, but they show you how, again, compositing effects would create the illusion that he was actually above New York City and everything. My favorite, and they had like the carousel where there's a guy, I forget what movie that is, but there's a guy who kind of like kicks the guy on the carousel to kind of get him to fall off. My favorite part was the Rear Window part. Do you remember that? Uh-huh. They had this big replica skyline of an apartment complex and everything, and all the windows were these little like TV screens with like real people walking backwards and forwards and everything, and you had these like racks of binoculars you could pick up, and you had to kind of spot the murderer, basically. You know,
that's cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool interactive little exhibit, and it was a shame that I was always very sad when it disappeared, because I didn't get a chance to go and check it out again before it did. But the park just kind of made its transition into more of an entertainment thrill park as opposed to a this is how we make movies park, you know, which I understand. Everything has to change eventually. But that attraction in particular was one of the last ones I remember that actually seriously tackled the subject of making movies. We still have the horror makeup show, which is like a tongue-in-cheek look at making movies. I don't know. Yeah, there's nothing really else over there like that anymore.
Yeah. Universal had it, and MGM at that point in time still had the same format.
Yeah, in the early 90s. Because they opened 1990 and 1991, right? They opened very close to each other. Mm-hmm. There were similar concepts, obviously. It was supposed to be taking you into a theme park that was like walking onto a movie set.
Yeah. And at that point in time, they had the same format. The Great Movie Ride. Mm-hmm. The tram thing in the back with Catastrophe Canyon and going by the Golden Girls.
Yeah, house. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was a much more involved tour back then. I meant on it. In the last few years I've been on it, you just go pretty much straight to Catastrophe Canyon. But yeah, back when it first opened, you'd take these, you'd go past like the Beethoven house and everything, all these like fake fronts. Yeah.
Actually, it was basically a neighborhood of every house you recognized from movies and TVs. And
yeah, and they were all right next door to each other. It was cool.
Yeah. When you were a kid, you'd drive by, and if you didn't catch the shitty angle where you saw that like there wasn't like a house behind it, you'd want to live there. You would totally want to live like across the street from the Golden Girls, right next door to Ernest.
Yeah, you'd want to get a fucking paper out on that neighborhood.
Two houses down from Alice from the Wonderland show.
Yeah, shit.
And they, at the same time that Universal's format of their park changed away from the movie industry, that was the same time that Disney was doing the same thing with MGM.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a couple rides that kind of fit that. But
it's very limited, yeah.
Yeah, if you've been going to that park for years, like, I could walk down New York Street and point at, like, molding on, like, the side of a window that was ripped off by Bette Midler's hand from a pre-show of a show that was there, like, 15, 20 years
ago. The lottery.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And even the Osborne Family Lights. Mm-hmm. Now we don't have those anymore, right?
Not MGM, no.
Yeah, when the last few years, like, people in our age bracket are adults and are going, it's just been New York Street. But when I was a kid, it was the Golden Girl house and Ernest house, and, like, that neighborhood was the Osborne Family Spectacle of Lights. Like, that...
I remember, like, the tram had to fucking stop at one moment to let another tram kind of crossing its path and everything, and the Beauty and the Beast stage show was happening kind of right there as you drove past it and shit. It was fucking weird.
You'd drive through this tunnel that took you by, like, costumes from movies, which I'm pretty sure they had, like, a lot of shit that I saw years later at Planet Hollywood, Downtown Disney.
Yes.
But on, like, one side, there'd be all these windows, and you'd look down, and it was a soundstage, and that's where they were doing, like, shows.
Actual productions, yeah.
Yeah, and what was that movie? Primal with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Anthony Hopkins or whatever. You'd go... They take you by the space shuttle from Armageddon, and when you went by, one side of it was perfect when they took off, and then the other side of it was fucked up with, like, meteors and shit.
Right, for when they landed, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to build two props. Yeah. You gotta save money.
You can shoot both scenes in the same day.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter on order.
Yeah. I having gone to those parks from such a young age, it's been interesting to watch them develop, honestly. Mm-hmm. Particularly Universal, because I remember strolling around the Boneyard and seeing the Bruce Shark and the Jeep from Jurassic Park and everything. And again, trying to kind of remember where that shit is now. I think it's where the concert stage is, am I right? Because that...
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the Boneyard stuff...
The things are still... gone. Yeah, they just scrapped that shit.
They had the dip machine from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. They had the spaceship from Flight of the Navigator. They had the armadillo from Armageddon.
Like, they had the fucking... The A-Wing? Not the A-Wing. Snow speeders. Yeah. Yep. From Empire Strikes Back, and the skiff from Jabba's Palace flying around the Sarlacc and all that shit.
I know they do. I have seen the last few times I went over there. In the last, like, 2 years, I have still seen one of the Hocus Pocus spell books.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the Rocketeer backpack. and then all the appliances from the high chair from Dinosaurs.
Right.
And then all that other shit from when we were younger. I have no idea where it went. They had so many cards from movies. Where
yeah.
did all that cool shit go?
What do you do with it when you don't need it anymore? Do you send it off to like a big fucking... like Raiders of the Lost Ark style archive, or do you just fucking scrap it? Scrap movie history.
Yeah.
I really hope it's not the latter, but
yeah, they turned Walt's old runway into the parking lot for the Disney buses.
Yeah, sacrilegious.
Yeah.
I know you've probably never been to the Disney parks in Paris, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time since I went there, maybe 2006 or so. But they have a studio tour over there as well. And I'm really interested to see what that looks like now, because one of the highlights of that tour, and this is going to show you how dated it is, you would go through a replication of London, I think, that was themed on the movie Reign of Fire.
Wow, McConaughey.
Yeah. And
wait, can we just both agree that movie's horrible?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually kind of a cool concept, and yeah. The movie itself is horrible.
Yeah, really bad execution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your tram would kind of go past, go through that scene. You'd stop at, like, the, I don't know, some big manhole or something. And the idea was like, wait, can you hear that? And there's, like, the sound of a dragon underneath you, and then there's a big fireball that goes up and everything. Like, I'm really interested to see whether they're still running that gimmick in 2017 or if they've... Maybe they've just scrapped their whole fucking tour as well, because I know they've added a bunch of shit since I was last there. They got Toy Story Land and Cars and Finding Nemo, and they got their own Tower of Terror now, all kinds of shit.
Can somebody get the rights to... can somebody, like, work with HBO so we can get a Game of Thrones show or experience
Bro,
or ride?
I'd be shocked if it's not already in the works, honestly.
Somebody has had to have been hitting HBO up being like, how much do you want?
Yeah. Give us a number. Like, just put write a number down, fold up the paper, slide it across the desk. You know?
Yeah, we'll
yeah. But, I mean, they've only got 2 seasons left, so... And I can't see them doing anything like Harry Potter, where they fucking make up a whole new franchise to kind of extend the popularity, you know? So the clock is ticking on that, honestly.
Can you just say that's some fucking bullshit?
Yeah, absolutely.
God.
Yeah, we're all friends here. Fuck, fuck Fantastic Beasts. Have you seen it?
Mm.
It's not great. I gave up halfway in, honestly.
Okay, I read Curse of Child.
Okay.
And that pissed me off first and foremost, because I see you own Curse of Child, or your wife owns Curse of Child.
She gave me the cliff notes of it, yeah.
Okay, there is a scene in there where Harry is arguing with his son.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's one of those moments where the kid's like, I wish I was never born.
Right.
And Harry's like, sometimes I wish I was never your father.
Uh-huh.
And in the course of the scene, if you're reading up to it, you understand, like, his kid just keeps fucking... Basically, his kid gets into as much trouble as he did back in the day. And
yeah.
Harry didn't have a parent to worry and, like, and wonder, you know? But now Harry actually... His kid's doing the same stupid bullshit that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Only now there's a parent that gives a shit.
Oh, hang on. Just this shot right here. I want to just...
Oh.
Stabs him in the chest. There's a knife mark on his face. And just a really weird composite shot right there. I don't know. Yeah.
So much of his character development because he didn't have a father or a mother.
Yeah.
When he becomes a father, Harry Potter would never, ever tell his kid, I wish I was never your father.
Yeah.
He would never say that. And I don't give a shit what the fuck she says. That character would not say that. So fuck you and your cash grab.
Yeah. I mean, my wife kind of explained the plot of that to me. She lost me at Voldemort has a daughter that goes to school with Harry Potter or whatever the fuck was going on with that shit.
Oh,
I don't know.
Home.
Yeah, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Every time his kid goes off to, like, fuck off, his kid is going off to kick it with Voldemort.
Yeah.
Voldemort's daughter.
I'm like, that's like if fucking Sauron the Dark Lord had a fucking kid that was running around with Sam and Frodo the whole day, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't get how Voldemort can actually reproduce.
We get Lord of the Rings, and then Saruman and the other kid are hanging out like it's fucking Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Buddy comedy.
Yeah.
And also the I'm going to make this play in two parts, and if you want to see the fruit, like the completion of it, you have to buy two separate tickets. Live theater doesn't work that way. Live theater, if you have a really awesome play and it's really fucking long, if you're doing a live theater show, people will, if your play is good, they will sit there for a really long play.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have to blow $150 or whatever the comparable amount of pounds that is twice.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Man.
Yeah.
Live shows aren't supposed to work like that.
It's poor form.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other show that actually plays in two parts like that.
Yeah. And Fantastic.
It's already shitty when movies do it, honestly, but
I would have been content if she never touched the Potter family again.
Mm-hmm.
Even Fantastic Beasts, I'm okay with a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the one I wanted. Yeah. We all want to see Grindy, and we all want to see gay Dumbledore, but that's not the movie I wanted. I wanted the prequel that was the Potter parents in Sirius Black and the Order of the Phoenix in full form, finishing with the parents dying,
mm-hmm.
and Harry Potter crying in the crib. Like, I wanted that prequel. And instead, we got some bullshit.
Fucking bumbling Mr. Bean going around New York. Yeah, like,
we're apparently calling him shit, and then when it's like, oh no, it's Johnny Depp, now everybody's like, wait a second, we have Johnny Depp next movie? Colin Farrell's not involved this time? God damn it.
Have you seen the honest trailer for Fantastic Beasts? We haven't seen. Have you seen the fucking movie though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have seen the movie at least. Okay.
Yeah.
Comparing him to like Willy Wonka and shit. Yeah, it's like, yeah, this doesn't bode well. Because he's made some weird choices in his last few years.
And I really like the Potter franchise.
And I'd be totally fucking cool if like Johnny Depp just plays the Fantastic Beasts stuff super seriously. You know.
Yeah. Just don't.
Don't give me the goofy voice and the pale face and shit. Yeah, like,
don't turn it into another. Like, I get it. He's not as much a character actor as some of the other actors that have worked through the entire Potter franchise. Because that
mm-hmm.
Potter franchise is a who's who of British character actors that the rest of the world didn't know about.
Absolutely.
They saw those.
Absolutely.
And that's all well and good. But Johnny Depp has the capability to not just do character pieces.
Yeah.
Don't turn this into a character piece.
Don't make this like a wacky, goofy kind of like, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Grindy's supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
I call him Grindy because it's cute.
Yeah.
I also used to call Mitt Romney Mittens, so. Definitely pissed off my father.
Probably pissed off Mitt as well. That's probably why you lost.
I guess. Did you see Bill O'Reilly? Is not coming back? As
yeah, I saw that.
O'Reilly factor?
Yeah.
Have you been seeing the video of him on Inside Edition?
No.
When the basically the teleprompter said, play us out to the Sting clip or whatever.
Mm.
And they're trying to like film it before like it's live. And he's like, play us out? What the fuck? I can't see anything. I can't read that. What the fuck does play us out mean? What does play us out mean? And you hear, like, the tech and the crew, like, dealing with his shit. Yeah. And Bill O'Reilly, like, loses his jacket and he's unbuttoning his shit. And he's like, fuck it. I'll write it my goddamn self and do a fucking live. And he's just yelling. And then they're like, in 3, 2, and he's like, and I'm Bill O'Reilly. And oh my god. That is my dad anytime telemarketers call.
Oh, really?
It's bad. Just YouTube Bill O'Reilly play us out. And it's funny as shit.
Was that your dad, by the way, at the when I came to see you outside the Hyatt?
Oh, yeah. The silver haired dude?
Yeah. He did not recognize me at all. So he thought I was interested in buying some of the like dancing shit you were hawking.
He also, there is a studio there. I mean, he does a lot of like corporate Santa stuff, but there's a dance studio there that has dad has been like their Santa every Christmas for the last like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so a bunch of these little girls have grown up with him being their Santa Claus. Like they literally did an event not out on the coast, but here in Orlando, just so that they could have their Santa
That's a, it's fucking adorable, man. I don't like where this is going.
This competition and all these little girls like that still believe in Santa.
Oh god.
So dad hadn't shaved since like months before Christmas, and like a week before we had the competition, he went to the barber shop and had them take it down to like a 2.
Oh.
And none of those little girls recognized him at the competition.
Nice.
Yeah, and all the parents were like, "Holy shit, you did that just to not fuck it up for the kids?" And he's like, "Yeah, because the moment I fuck it up for the kids is the moment you guys don't have your big Santa event."
Yeah, that's true.
You know, once your kids don't give a shit.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not going to be the one to ruin it for them. That's your job.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if your kid still believes in Santa, though, and you see the guy that you are fucking 99% sure is Santa at a random event, all Santa needs to do is just fucking turn to them, just put the finger to the lips. Just be like, shh. And the kid would fucking like, suddenly the kid'd be like super psyched because now they're in on a secret.
Yeah,
like Santa.
Yeah.
Santa's got a side gig. Like, you know, it's quiet in fucking April, May for Santa. He hasn't got much to do right now. Santa's got to eat too, so. Yeah. So he could have totally just pulled that off. Just fucking, if any kid's just standing there kind of mouth agape, just give them the finger to the mouth.
Dad's got a bunch of Santa promo photos where Santa's wearing his red board shorts and his Santa hat and nothing else, but deep in water. Or like lounging under like a palm tree on the beach. Because Santa's in Florida. What the fuck else is there?
That's true.
People? You can't do snow scenes.
I thought this was going in the way of like Santa's got promo photos the way that Santa Jr. has promo photos. Just holding a fucking dick and ball ornament over his crotch. Yeah,
not anymore. I know Santa Sr. had photos like that. Magic magazines in the industry at that point took out a full page ad and wrote it up like it was an advertisement for a magic trick that was being sold.
I'm gonna make a baby appear.
he had like credit lists like produced by executive produced by, and it was the grandparents. Names and shit. But when magicians produce stuff off of their person and aren't using like a gimmick table or like an assistant, it is called a body load. And in big bold letters on this full page ad where he advertised my birth like a magic trick, it was produced, like made appear, produced with the use of a clever body load.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Man. So, your dad's funny. Maybe I should get him on these podcasts instead of you.
Well, the goal is to get a write-up in that magazine now.
Okay. What magazine is it?
Magic,
okay.
It's Magic Magazine. It's like the Magic... I can't. Not anymore.
Doesn't exist?
Nope, not anymore. They close this year.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Better fucking get pregnant real quick.
That is a bummer. Was it Magic? Was it Genie? No, it was Genie because it's Weenie Pink. Okay.
You're so fucking excited right now.
Genie and Magic have been like the magic magazines for like magicians for years.
Mm-hmm.
Genie's older than Magic Magazine. G-E-N-I-I. They back in the, like, now they have like full color issues and they're really good quality and stuff, but back in the day the cover was always black and whatever color, it was always like black, white, and a color that was printed to keep costs down. Well, Harry Anderson, who was the judge on Night Court, is also a magician, and he one year is a parody for a magic event. He made a magazine called Weenie. The front of Genie like normally had like the magic castle on it. The Weenie had the Oscar Mayer hot dog vehicle in front of the magic castle on it. And he made a parody issue called Weenie that basically made fun of all the magicians of the day. Well, for the printer, he found to print the Weenie magazine to keep it as legit and close to the real thing that it was parodying as possible, he contacted the actual printer for Genie magazine. And the guy goes, "What color do you want the cover to be?" And Harry Anderson goes, "I don't know. Grind up some hot dogs and see what color that is." And so, yeah, make the color the black, white, and the color of Frankenfurter. So he ground up some Frankenfurters, and that, like, pinkish color, he made the cover of Weenie magazine pink as a ground-up hot dog. Now, later on that month, Genie was going to the press, and they used the same press for Weenie. Genie called the printer, and the printer, like, sent her the files, and the printer's like, "Awesome, what color do you want me to use for the cover?" And Genie's like, "Ah, whatever you have on the press." And they didn't know that he had just printed Harry Anderson's parody issue that was Weenie pink. So that issue, that month's issue of Genie, was printed Weenie pink because he said, "Whatever the fuck is on the press." And that issue is the one that has my "produced by the use of a clever body load," like, fucking bacon. So there you go. That is way more interesting of a story than I would expect.
I have no interesting story about my birth announcement, if there even was one. So kudos to you, sir.
Did you hear the, oh god, now I forget what the anagram was, where the kid's talking to his dad, and it's like, "Hey dad, why is our sister named so-and-so?" And it's an anagram of, like, a place.
Oh.
And the dad's like, "Oh, it's because your mother really likes so-and-so, so she made your sister's name an anagram." It would be like, "Hey, Dad, why is my sister's name Britney Spears?" "Oh, well, because your mom's a Presbyterian, and she really likes the word Presbyterian, so if you rearrange the letters, it's Britney Spears." And the kid's like, "Thanks, Dad." And the dad's like, "You're welcome, Alan."
I'm just realizing it's been like about 40 minutes since we talked about the movie that's on the screen.
It's fine. These people don't care. They're probably listening and, like, in their car as you're driving to work.
That's very true. But I think I've kind of... We've touched on everything major about the... Yeah, I've got my to-do list out of the way. I forgot how much of this movie there still is after she gets killed, you know?
Got my bottle opener, so I had to use a lighter to open the beer. But for real, if you get a chance, jump on the YouTubes and look at the promotional material.
I was just about to bring it up, yeah, because this chick here is the one that's in the shower scene, am I right? Well, not the shower scene, but the trailer ends with Hitchcock kind of in the bathroom, and he pulls the shower curtain away, and it's... Yeah.
But if you freeze frame it, it's clearly not Jamie Lee Curtis's mother.
Right, obviously. It's her, right?
I think.
Vera something?
Probably.
I don't know.
Vera. And then they got Vera whatever the fuck for Bates Motel, right? Or is that her sister? Who's the one, who's Violet in American Horror Story? Farmiga.
Who's Violet in America? I don't know which season you're talking about.
Season one.
Violet.
The daughter.
Oh, God.
Her sister.
Christ, huh?
Mrs. Bates in Bates Motel. Her older sister.
Okay.
She's like that actress. Did not know they were related until very recently.
Really? When you say Mrs. Bates.
Vera. Yeah. So her name is Vera, and the actress that plays Norman Bates' mom in Bates Motel is also named Vera, which is weird. And then her sister is Violet in American Horror Story Season 1.
Okay. Well, that fucking... you find that happening, like, a lot in Hollywood. We, Oh, God. A couple of, speaking of Spooky Empire much, much earlier, but a couple of conventions ago, Terrigal talking to the guy, you know who played Sophia in The Walking Dead? Or you know, so you don't know the answer to that, but you know Sophia from The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Fuck you! How'd you pull that out of the air so fast? Well, but you can't fucking remember that they use chocolate syrup in Psycho for the blood.
We did Spooky. Me and my business partner did a 20-penny show with Spooky, and
no shit.
When we showed up, it was mayhem, and we showed up yeah. in full costume and makeup all day because we were repping our business and the Mermaid Tank.
Uh-huh.
Hooked up with all the dealers, like hooked up with artists that have like at Spooky that have like now hooked us up with like art
right.
for the future.
Yeah,
and then we're going through the room where they're doing all the signings. I'm not gonna like toot my own horn, but my costume's pretty fucking fly. But that's because I've been working on it for years.
Yeah.
So when I show up, all these celebrities are jumping up, getting pictures of us. We were those dudes.
Yeah.
And so when Madison Lentz jumps up and at her her whole family's actors, so they're all doing signings and she's mm-hmm. been selling the Sophia shirt.
Yeah.
She jumps up to get a picture with us, and I'm like, hey. Maddie, Sophia, I'm actually a really big fan. We're doing a side show tonight, and this is going to sound really, really weird, but I really wanted you to stand in my face. And Madison Lynch, she's like, Mackenzie, and calls her older sister, who's on Under the Dome. Over.
That's what I was going to bring up, yeah. And I didn't know those two were related until we fucking got talking to them.
Well, Mackenzie's talking to us, and she goes, hang on, I'll try and convince them. And they go over to their parents, and then they come back like 10 minutes later, and she's like, okay, our parents will let her come to the show, but they won't let her stand in your face. But if you want, I'll do it. They're totally okay with that because I'm old enough.
Right.
And so that night, the Lynch homies showed up and... All right, yeah. So Maddie Lynn sends her sister up to stand in my face and stands in my face. Huge reaction from the crowd.
When you say stands on your face, by the way, what is your act?
On 50 pounds, we had just ground my face. I had just walked on 50 pounds of broken beer bottles that we broke on stage because at that point our show was really slow moving. And then I jumped in it, and then we lay my face in it and get somebody from the audience to stand on top of my face.
And just push it into the broken glass,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, if everything goes well, there's like bloody ears and shit. And so,
and that's your best case scenario.
Yeah, yeah. And so she stands in my face, and everybody loves it. And afterwards, Tyler's like, so, what were you in? And she's like, well, I was just in the Hunger Games movie. And Tyler's like, I haven't seen it. And she's like, well, you should watch it. It's actually kind of good. Sounded like she knew exactly what we were thinking. She fucking knew. And she's like, no, really, guys, just give it a chance.
Like I said, there's pride in your work and there's arrogance. There's also humility.
Yeah. And then we turned around and watched it the next time that we were like in the hotel room for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Not working, and it was actually kind of good.
There you go, then.
Not even different. The Divergent series sucked donkey dick, but the Hunger Games movies, I can do it.
Yeah.
I want Lenny Kravitz jackets. I want to be able to do my hair and wear makeup as crazy as those people and not be judged. That's all I want. So what about Maddie Lynch? You mentioned Maddie Lynch, and then I'm like, yeah, and you're like, fuck you, dog.
No, yeah, like literally all I had to say is that the chick that you just mentioned from Under the Dome was her fucking sister. I had no fucking idea.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think she was actually... This must have been a different mayhem. This must have been a while back or something. Because she wasn't there when we got... Because my wife obviously has tickets for Universal, so... Our friend, who's an agent, was speaking to her dad, who was managing her, and they were just talking about going to Universal, so just word got back to them. Oh, we want tickets? Yeah, sure, here's like 3-4 tickets. But I don't remember Sophia from The Walking Dead at this point, you know, in all of 7 episodes, I guess, over 2 seasons.
But when she died, it made us cry.
Not even me, honestly. Like, I watched that shit on DVD like a year and a half after it happened. So
I'm not gonna say that when Sophia died in The Walking Dead, yeah, it made people cry, but not because of Madison Lynch necessarily, but more so because of all the lead up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And how the hope.
How you spent 8 fucking episodes looking for her. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the whole time she's been chilling.
Yeah.
The little brother is also an actor, and the mom of Tom Jane's wife in The Mist.
Oh, sweet. Okay, that's cool. I wonder if that's how she got hired for Walking Dead then, because obviously Frank Darabont was in the directed The Mist.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
and that's why. I mean, fucking Dale and Carol were in The Mist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know he likes to reuse people, so I wonder if they just kind of got introduced that way. I would not be surprised. Like, Frank Darabont seems like the kind of guy that would just, like, look after his homies and shit, so.
It's gotta be awesome, though, when your whole family works in the industry, so, like, every single one of you gets it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And there's, like, a con for one specific niche, but the whole family can fucking turn up and still kind of do shit. Because, yeah, I don't remember Sophia from The Walking Dead, but that was right around the time we were really into enjoying Under the Dome. And apparently she was over in, I think he said she was in London at that time doing a different convention kind of by herself. So it might have been like a year after her, because I don't remember you guys doing a show at Spooky. Must have been a while ago.
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
I mean, they'd probably take you back now, honestly. They said, like, there's not much going on this weekend for Spooky, honestly.
Absolutely. But there's only been, like, there's stipulations that have been holding us back. We would totally want to do it, but considering how much equipment we have now.
Right.
And if we came out, we'd want to go big and do it right.
You've got a bigger show to kind of show off this time.
Yeah, bigger show. I need, like, we don't have the same end that we did with the hotel room at the Wyndham, you know?
Right.
The last time we worked there, it was the easiest and most conducive for us to make that work with our other schedule.
Makes sense. Okay. So here's our big twist. With Mrs. Bates in a four-legged chair that now miraculously turns very slowly.
California, it's on a light.
So it's just a super slow-motion fall. It did.
I got you, bitch! It's been forever!
And just in case there was any confusion, he screams, "I'm Norma Bates." that face we're seeing of right there.
Face every Sunday, depending on my attitude when I'm laying down.
Kind of looks like flashback to The Mummy last week, actually.
Yes.
When he kind of sucks the life force and just leaves the dried husk there and everything. And here's our exposition ending.
Yeah, I mean, I hate when, like, guy whose role is not worth anything other than just there for exposition.
Where was this guy the whole fucking movie?
Yeah, I hate when they do that in the first, like, 5 minutes, but honestly, I'd rather have this at the very beginning.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of a cop-out, right, to just wrap it up at the end.
It's like, here's a paragraph, epilogue, and then let's get back to final cutaway scene.
Yeah, like, I would totally be okay with a fucking, just a scrolling text. Norman Bates suffered from intense psychological issues that involved him believing that he was his mother. Just, like, just fucking real droll like that, you know?
Just give me that voiceover over the scene of him in the cell and the car being pulled out of the car.
Yeah, these days you could cut this guy out and just cut straight to, he's already screamed, "I'm Norma Bates." Just cut to the scene where he's getting, like, the blanket over his shoulder and he's talking like his mom. And just let the audience put it together.
Honestly, Hitchcock did his cameo in the first, like, few minutes. I'd have been okay if even his voice was a voiceover.
What if Hitchcock was the guy who walked in to come and fucking explain everything?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. As long as we can eliminate this whole exposition scene. Give me interesting shit to look at, not like guy that looks like Attilio that owns the that used to own the Universal Magic Shop. He looks okay. You don't.
That's a really niche topic of conversation.
Exactly like an old boss of mine.
Okay.
Like exactly like he's walking like him. He's got that squinty eye. Right. At him. He's so Italian.
That's some slicky hair there.
Yeah, bro. I bet you if you ran a comb through it once and then you like flicked the comb, you hear as like the shit hit the ground. Like you're a samurai shaking the head off, but you're an Italian shaking the I mean that in the least profiling way possible. But Italians, they all wear that greasy shit in their hair.
I love how even in this fucking in this exposition we're like, but when they buried the coffin, didn't they feel that it was empty? Oh, they buried a weighted coffin and he hit the boat. Like, I don't think we're fucking asking those kind of questions at this point at the end of the movie. Like, all we need to know is that, yeah, he killed his mom, killed her lover, and now he's pretending to be his mom and just punishing himself. It's like they thought of every single question that the internet of this day would be asking. Well, hey, if they just fucking...
See those drawers behind him?
Mm.
Like, they're almost like a library card index drawers.
Yeah.
Or like apothecary drawers. I've been looking for one. For...
Okay.
Like, for business.
Uh-huh.
Are.
Right, yeah, I imagine.
I'm not fucking think a nice one would be as expensive as they are. It's fucking absurd. It's like they knew specifically a magician was going to be looking and was going to pay X amount of money.
Right.
Like when you know you're selling to your market, you can charge more when you know they're going to pay for it.
Right.
See, this exposition scene is so goddamn long. This whole thing, you're trying to explain transvestite in 1960, bro, you need more than 3 minutes.
You could wrap this up in 5 seconds in this time. If we did a modern day remake.
We don't need to know what a transvestite is in 1960 at this point in the movie.
No.
We know enough. We know all we need to know to feel how we're supposed to feel. What the fuck is that? How did that... Wow. Okay, so I'm not even gonna lie. I opened up my Facebook to send a message to my ride, and then like I sent a message, and then a dirty photo just shows up on my web browser. I don't know if you caught it, but this whole time that we've been talking, there's just been one fucking glaring up off the table, and I just noticed and was like, "What the fuck?" And my immediate response is, I have to have a virus. There's no way I don't have a virus. I literally clicked on nothing, and all of a sudden, there's naked people on my...
We've all got viruses on our tablets, Carl.
but
Cersei, trying to make that fly, seriously?
No.
What was it?
I have an iPhone. You use your iPhone for shit like that, so you don't have to worry about it. But I've been downloading a bunch of random shit, so there's a really good chance I downloaded a bunch of viruses as well.
Hey, I'm not your girlfriend. You don't have to explain to me.
I'm sure she does.
If you got naked people on your tablet, it's absolutely fine.
I'm sure if my girl would have saw it, she would have been like, ooh. I'm sure she would have handled it way better. But it just made... I went from talking to you to my mind was like,
rewind.
I know what I was talking about.
It's like, well, that's good because now we can wrap up because we have like 50 seconds.
Position at the end. We know everything we need to know about Norman Bates. We know we're supposed to hate him. We know he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
We now know he's the main character.
We
did not know that for at least the first 20.
Yeah. For the first 40 minutes, we're acting like Janet Leigh's the main character.
Mm-hmm.
So. Have you ever seen any of the sequels, by the way? That's a yes. I haven't seen any of the sequels, so it's one of those things where it just, like Saw, maybe it just kind of cheapens the original.
Yeah, I don't really like it. I mean, even the sequel, like, after with Anthony Perkins, like, I'm just not... Mm-hmm.
Not on board with.
Yeah, no. As far as I'm concerned, he never got out.
It's all good.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, wow, we got, like, zero credits apart from the opening there, so I guess we'll finish up here. All right. The For Big Gay Date, my name is Dave Mosley. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. Good night.